Happy Tuesday to you, J-Mart and Ramon, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors on 104.5 The Zone. Will Bowling back in for Jason Martin today. Ramon Foster, Jonathan Schaefer, our producer, coming up in a couple of minutes. Yeah. Your chance to see the Vols. UT Ticket Tuesday, you got a chance to win Tennessee tickets coming up in Neyland Stadium as the Vols get ready to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores, and we will chat with Brian Rice of Sports Radio WNML coming up here in a couple minutes as well. 1 hour down. We're waking up. We got our coffee. I got a little protein shake here. I made my breakfast last night.
Hey, now.
Put it in the fridge. We're on 200 level hosting morning shows now.
Not overnight oats, but you got a protein shake.
I do. Hey. I do. Easiest. I the only thing I know how to cook is breakfast. That's facts about me.
It's because it's the easiest.
Correct. Yeah. Really good at eggs. Microwave popcorn also a specialty, but I've started just going like the protein shake in the morning route.
You can't brag on microwave popcorn, Will.
So this is a true story.
We're just proud that he doesn't burn it.
I thought my family had a secret recipe for popcorn growing up, and they were literally just melting butter and pouring it on there. So yeah. I was like, hey, can I get like the secret recipe today? They're just pouring butter on it.
They shielded you from a lot.
Everything's better when you pour butter on it.
That's what the restaurants are.
Good God, man.
Ron Slay just got in the chat.
What's up, Slay?
Hey, glad Ron just woke up.
The Zone TV is where you can hang out with the show, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook Live, and Twitter.
Yeah. We going to pay the bills on the top seven, bottom three yet?
We're going to do that at 9 o'clock.
Oh.
Because we want Buck Rising to respond to that immediately after.
Buck's just going to yell at me he's just going to pick something I say. He's just going to yell at that. Then again, he does that every day for 3 days.
Sit on it and spin.
That's right.
I mean, that's the plan.
Get off our show. One of the drops that y'all have.
Is it really?
I'll just be a drop. Let me be your clown.
Let me see what's on the drop page. I'm going to take a look at that.
He's got a lot of stuff on
him. He does.
Julio!
That's one of my favorite drops.
What else do we have here? Let's see.
Yeah, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus.
Who said that?
It's Caleb Farley after he got drafted.
I forgot.
When he was asked, are you going to be ready for training camp? He said, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus.
Well, you get an opportunity next spring to get a full, healthy him. No, you'll get him by the summertime.
Yeah. Yeah, should be, what, mini camp, OTA?
Start camp probably on PUP still.
Yeah,
they got a lot of stuff on this page involving polls.
What is wrong with you this morning?
They do. because they do so many polls every day.
Can you please phrasing yourself? Please, thanks.
Phrasing.
Thank you, Will. Thank you. So we're going to talk a little bit of college football, a little bit of Tennessee coming up over the next couple hours. We got Brian Rice. We got Chris Williams. Former first-round NFL draft pick from Vanderbilt. But, Ramon, we were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Dan Mullen, out at Florida. This is something we can get Brian's take on as well, because I know he will take any opportunity like us to dunk on that institution.
Yeah, we will.
I am of the opinion that Florida's next rebuild is going to be its hardest in a little while. Because you look at the talent that Dan Mullen had at his disposal when he got there year one, year two.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different from whoever's next, because right now Florida's ranked 29th in the country in recruiting.
Yeah.
10th in the SEC for the class of 2022. Ramon, this should be one of the easiest places in college football to recruit.
Okay, when did Mullen get there? Because I'm on 24/7 right now.
2018 was his first full.
I'm gonna go back. That was his first full.
So I've got it right here. I've got a list of it.
Okay, all right, perfect.
Dan Mullen recruiting class rankings 2018, 14th in the country, 4th in the SEC.
Yep.
Which I'm shocked that 14th that year got you 4th in the SEC. I don't know what was going on in 2018.
No 5 stars, but it is loaded with 4 stars.
Yeah.
Kyle Pitts was in that class.
Okay.
Okay. There we go.
2019.
Let me go to it.
9th best class in the country. The 5th best class in the SEC.
That's top 10s.
That's more traditional SEC recruiting. If you're anywhere from 8 to 12, you're 5 to 7 in the SEC.
No fives again, but loaded with 4 stars again.
Yep. Class of 2020. 9th in the country. 5th in the SEC again. Same thing. These are good players, but now at this point, Ramon, Georgia in 2018, first. Mm-hmm. Georgia in 2019, second. Georgia in 2020, first. Mm-hmm. You talk about building what Kirby Smart has built. That doesn't happen overnight just by coaching better than other people on the other side. You got good coaches everywhere in the SEC.
Absolutely.
They've got better players than everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Their ones, twos, and threes are better than a lot of your ones and twos.
So if we're going back to that same year, now you're starting to see the payoff of what Kirby's done.
Yeah.
Because look at what Kirby's at right now.
Right.
By the way, that class of 2020 for Dan Mullen got one five-star. He was the number one in the state of Florida, number 12 nationally. Javon Dexter, a D tackle, 6'6 and a half, 286.
There you go.
Jeez.
Class of 2021, then it starts to slip a little bit for Dan Mullen.
Come on now.
12th in the country. You should never at the University of Florida be outside the top 10 in recruiting, ever.
I'm with you. You're
fifth in the SEC.
You're in the melting pot.
You are.
Which states are hot as far as recruiting, Will?
Texas, Florida, Georgia, California.
Louisiana.
Louisiana. Yeah. And I put Virginia.
Tidewater area.
Up in that range as well.
And the kids that he's getting, if I can just give you a class, he's Florida heavy, Alabama, Florida again, Georgia, Florida again. He got a PA in. North Carolina is sneaky, too.
It is.
Carolinas.
That's part of the reason Clemson has done what they've done.
Which is one of the reasons why Tennessee has kind of slipped, because Clemson, Tennessee
always got North Carolina kids.
Always, from Jonathan Hefney, Sean Ellis, Tracy, T-Mac.
Jay Graham's from there.
Jay Graham's from it. Materia Hardesty's from there. It's so many guys that was from the Carolinas.
That's the big reason why Jay Graham was brought back to the staff, was to recruit North Carolina last year.
Yep.
And that's where Hendon Hooker comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Hendon Hooker, his dad, Hall of Famer, of course, at North Carolina A&T.
Mm-hmm. And looking at this class of 2020 class for Dan Mullen, I'm saying Texas, I'm saying Florida, I'm saying Georgia, I'm saying the Carolinas. He's hitting all of the hot spots as far as the talent goes.
Right.
And the class of 2020, he's got another five-star. He was the number 29th player nationally, number two in his state of Florida, no, at his position, and ninth in the state. That was Jason Marshall, a five-star DB.
There you go. It's going to be harder for somebody to rebuild what they've got if that class is going to get worse at Florida, too. It's 29th right now. Dan Mullen's out. Mm-hmm. It's going to get worse before it gets better this cycle.
What's crazy? They're seeing directly the results of his firing. Kirby flipped a number one player, five star, from Florida to Georgia.
Yep.
I think it was a DB, a wide receiver. It was a small skill.
Yep.
Just like that.
So we'll get into that with Brian Rice coming up here in a minute. Somebody on Twitter telling me, "Don't worry, fellas, Napier going to get us right." We'll see.
The guy that got passed overall last year.
Because the last time Florida was going in a coaching carousel, they didn't have to get a group of five up-and-comer head coach. They were getting a sitting Power Five coach. That's what's different this time around.
Yeah, that's right. They pulled him from state.
They did. So coming up next, we talk with Brian Rice, Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee, getting ready for Vanderbilt. You will get his thoughts on the matchup coming up this Saturday, plus what's going on in the coaching carousel that is underway and is nowhere close to being finished in the SEC, plus your chance to win Tennessee tickets to see the Vols take on Vanderbilt. Hang around. We got your chance to win a couple of tickets coming up here in a few minutes. Brian Rice coming up next. Shea Martin Ramon, powered by All Four Seasons on 104.5 The Zone. Vanderbilt week for the Vols, Tennessee, and the Commodores coming up right here at 104.5 The Zone. Coverage begins.
Day.
That's right. With myself and Ron Slay on the Tennessee Tailgate Show coming up at noon on Saturday. It is J-Mart and Ramon, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors here on 104.5 The Zone. Alongside Ramon Foster, Will Bowling back with you. Tennessee fans, it is UT Ticket Tuesday. Vols fans, each Tuesday before Tennessee home games, you have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see your Tennessee Vols at Neyland Stadium. Be caller number 5 right now to win 2 tickets to see Tennessee Vanderbilt this Saturday. That is set 615-737-1045. Caller number 5 right now wins 2 tickets to see Tennessee and Vanderbilt this Saturday. Call Jonathan Schaefer at 615-737-1045. And you are headed on a cold Saturday to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Man, senior day was so cool, Will.
Oh, I bet.
Me. I ain't gonna lie to you. I didn't think much of it at the time, as we about to bring in E. Kane in a little bit. No, Brian Rice in a little bit.
Yeah.
I was just looking back on it. My bad. I almost messed that one up right
now. Boy, how dare you insult Brian?
Let's go ahead and bring him in now.
Bring him in right now.
Come on, Brian.
Joining us on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. What's going on, Brian? Eric?
Well, after the bump back there, I was expecting that you were going to want me to give up a third down on an important drive from the Bush-Jones era. So, you know, that's kind of it. But, no, senior day always hits just right. And, Ramon, obviously, I never went through it the way you did. But having gone to games my whole life, that last game and watching the guys run through the tee individually is emotional for everybody in the stadium. I can only imagine what it's like for the guys that get to run through for the last time.
It was, and I'm glad we're doing this ticket giveaway too, because it's special for those dudes, for those guys, because you got to look at it, even the walk-ons and everybody else that's a part of it. And this is every university, but of course I'm being Tennessee-centric because I'm a VFL. But watching that and actually run through the tee solo, have your head coach at the end of it, you hug him up, you get to the end of it, you see your parents, man, and I'll never forget watching my mom watch me run through the tee and me hand her that flower, and now being an adult and recognizing that moment. And I know the basketball team does it and everybody does it. It's some cool, on the scale of 1 to 10, you feel me?
You're right.
This is some good stuff. And, yeah. And it's just super, super cool. You build 4 years, sometimes longer than that, or guys become walk-ons and get scholarships. And it's just a good feel, good moment, man. And I wanted to actually go to this one because I know a few of the guys that's on the team, but it's my wife's birthday weekend, and we're going to pass on it. So this is good stuff, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Tennessee and Vanderbilt coming up Saturday. Brian Rice with us here on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. Brian, before we get into the Vols and Commodores, we're talking about Dan Mullen, talking about this Florida rebuild before the break, and I'm of the opinion that this is going to be one of the harder Florida rebuilds in recent memory because of the way Dan Mullen has recruited and kind of left the cupboard much more bare than what it was when he got there. Do you agree with that? And, you know, what's next for this program? I'm glad Tennessee fans are getting the opportunity to kind of sit and point and laugh at Florida this time of year. It seems like this is always something that happens now every, you know, 5 years or so.
You know, it's a complicated question because the transfer portal obviously changes things a little bit in that you can go get guys, particularly if you have guys that leave in the transfer portal with the new rule this year, you can replace up to 7 of those. But I think you're right. He has not recruited as well as some past coaches that have left there. When Ron Zook left, he left it absolutely loaded for Urban Meyer. And it seems like the recruiting that was going to be his downfall anyway, because Dan Mullen was counting on developing guys. Not being able to do that is his downfall, and it does leave the next guy behind a little bit. What I'm worried about for Florida, and I guess as a Tennessee guy, worried is probably not the right word, but what happens in this coaching search? We saw in their last coaching search, they end up getting Dan Mullen, and they feel good about that. But guys like Scott Frost weren't interested because they had seen what the Florida job had done to Jim McElwain and Urban Meyer. So I really wonder, from that pressure standpoint, how that affects a coaching pool that has a lot of options this year. High-level coaches have a lot of really good options, may even have some more over the next few days. So how does that affect their search? That's what I'm really interested in seeing here over the next few days.
It's incredible that Mullen finishes his Florida tenure 34-15. His winning percentage was the highest of any coach not named Spurrier or Meyer since 1924 at Florida. And one of the main options to replace him, Brian, of course, an old friend, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. But something that people aren't really talking about with Kiffin, he's not exactly setting the world on fire in recruiting at Ole Miss either. I mean, last year's class finished 17th, 6 spots ahead of a depleted Tennessee class.
Well, and I wonder if Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss and says, not in the SEC. You know, because ultimately you want to win a championship. Would Lane Kiffin be enamored with the idea of being able to run the table in the East and face Nick Saban in the championship game rather than in the regular season? Sure. Would Lane Kiffin be more enamored with looking at the Miami job that he's been rumored to covet and say, okay, so I've got a one-game season in beating Clemson. Mm-hmm. As long as we take care of business the rest of the way, we're going to be in the playoffs. I wonder if that's something that's more in line with his ego and in a Miami area that he's already comfortable with and has some connections with. I see the draw for Lane Kiffin at Florida, but I also, if I'm Lane Kiffin, look around and go, my goal is to win a championship and prove I'm a championship coach. There's an easier path to do that at a school that I'm already interested in.
This blows my mind. When it was brought up, I'm thinking to myself, like, no, absolutely not. He's got Ole Miss. He's got all the hottie totties. He got everything that they want in Mississippi. Why, though, Brian? I know you already explained it, but you couldn't possibly think Lane would do this again. Like, he's got him up, you know? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, there are two trains of thought here. If I'm Lane Kiffin and I want to be somewhere and build my legacy forever, Ole Miss is never going to fire him. I mean, as long as he's winning, you know, 8 games a year, they're never going to get rid of him because mm-hmm. I think they realized when they got rid of David Cutcliffe and then wandered in the desert for a long time that, hey, the only time we've won outside of the Cutcliffe era was when Hugh Freeze was cheating. And if Lane Kiffin is doing this, he's our guy forever. And Lane can be a very big fish in a very small pond in Oxford, Mississippi. But I think Lane Kiffin realizes he's never going to win a national championship at Ole Miss. It's not the path and the number of things that have to happen in the right year, the right time, are just too many, at least until Nick Saban retires.
Yeah.
So can you go to a place like Miami and change that narrative a little bit? I think he thinks he can. The question is, what does he want to do long term? And I think he's the only one that can answer that. We could all be wrong. All the speculation about Lane Kiffin taking the LSU job, the Florida job, the Miami job, the wherever job, could be just idle speculation. It could be that he does want to stay at Ole Miss. I don't think we have a really solid answer on that, but I'm kind of with you. He has a perfect situation there if that's where he wants to be long term.
Okay, so let's look on the other side as far as him trying to win. He's been there for 2 years right now and had a little bit of buzz last year. He's a recruit's dream. He flirts with them like nobody else, okay? He's good at social media. You got to give him his props. He has this attraction about him that Tennessee fans sometimes can't even let go of also. With that being said, though, is it Oxford that's messing him over? And I know every single SEC school has a college town feel. Tuscaloosa, Starkville, even Knoxville. Heck, let's go to South Carolina. These aren't major cities where it's like Miami or Atlanta where you or Athens where you're close to Atlanta. So I'm looking at the recruiting class right now. This year, class of 2022, they're ranked 37, way behind us. Like, is that the reason why he would want to leave Oxford?
I think in the name, image, and likeness world, it is going to be increasingly harder for schools in smaller towns like that to compete. Now, I don't think it's going to be a problem in Tuscaloosa, particularly with its proximity to Birmingham. I don't think it's a problem, long-term at least, in Knoxville or Columbia or Lexington. But you get the real small towns that you have to have some sort of legitimate name, image, and likeness deal attached to the money that's exchanged. That may be a little more difficult long-term, and he may be seeing that. Or, you know, Lane Kiffin could have seen this as a 3-year plan to get out of somewhere or to get out of it and head off somewhere, or a 2-year plan, or whatever it's going to end up being. Does his recruiting fall off a little bit because of that? I don't know. His recruiting at Ole Miss has been very curious to me because he's built up the hype and they have the whole come to the sit deal, and he gets a lot of kids to visit. He doesn't get a lot of kids to commit. I wonder what the disconnect is there, if it is some of the name, image, and likeness stuff, or it's just something else of they went to Oxford, Mississippi and figured out, nope, can't do 4 years there.
Same
can't
league.
Do 3 years there. Not gonna work. Oxford's a lovely place to spend a weekend.
Yeah. As much as I love Cutcliffe when he was recruiting me in 2002, 2003, I was not trying to be in Mississippi. That drive
no.
is a scary drive for it almost is. Any human being, okay?
There's no doubt about it. So, Brian, let's transition a little bit to Tennessee's recruiting, Tennessee's matchup with Vanderbilt coming up on Saturday. It seems like every conversation right now about Josh Heupel is prefaced with, well, but we don't know if he can recruit. Because at this point, Josh Heupel has proven on the field that he is overachieved as much as any first-year head coach has this year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Tennessee gets a commit yesterday. How much is he just trying to prioritize the transfer portal over recruiting high school kids? Because as you know, rebuilding programs is unlike what it used to be, and maybe you can accelerate a rebuild a little bit by getting another Hendon Hooker, another Javonte Payton. You feel like that's something he's trying to prioritize?
I think he's trying to prioritize it for next year's team. I don't think Tennessee is going to become transfer portal U going forward. But with this past offseason, with the exception of a couple of coaches on his staff, Rodney Garner being one, Cody Burns being another, this staff wasn't recruiting SEC-level players for this recruiting cycle when they were at UCF. They had some relationships, but not nearly enough. So I think proof of concept is on the field. You're showing what you're going to do on offense. Certainly that is going to be attractive to any running back, any wide receiver, and any quarterback in future classes. It was a bit of a late start for guys in this class. I think there's still some guys on the board at the running back and wide receiver positions that they're going after. But I do think ultimately the transfer portal will be huge for the next year's version of Tennessee. But this is the offseason where it really starts for high school kids, though. You're going in to kids who are rising sophomores, rising juniors, and rising seniors into next year and saying, all right, here's what we did. Here's where we turn. And look, if Hendon Hooker doesn't come back, that's bad for the 2022 Tennessee team. But I think it's great for future recruiting because it's, hey, in a year, we turned a quarterback who was just a guy at another school. Mm-hmm. He was just a guy at Virginia Tech. I mean, he did some good things, but ultimately he lost his job. He was just a guy. We turned him into an NFL draft pick in 1 year.
Yeah,
I think that's incredibly valuable as a recruiting pitch. Now, I think they would certainly all rather have Hendon Hooker back for another year where you can show, hey, with 2 years in our system, we turned him into a second-day draft pick. You know, Hendon Hooker's ceiling is probably below the first round, but if you turn him into a second or a third-round draft pick in 2 years, coming from where he was at Virginia Tech, that's valuable. But again, it's not valuable for this class. It's valuable for the ensuing classes. And that's where you have to build both ways. It's what makes it difficult, or is what has made it difficult in building programs in the past, because you have to have that weight. Yeah. So maybe your second year isn't as good. Maybe that very important third year isn't as good. Now the transfer portal changes all of that. Mm-hmm. Josh Heupel's going to every wide receiver who feels like they didn't get enough targets at their current school and said, all right, here's what we can do. We give you six targets. You're going to have the opportunity to turn that into 100 yards every game. If you're a running back who doesn't have enough carries, hey, you may only get seven carries a game here. So you're going to get seven carries, you're going to have a chance to average 7 yards a carry. That's going to get the attention of kids, and that's going to get the attention of scouts at the next level. And I think you build short-term through the portal and make sure this offseason you're deep into the next three recruiting classes and showing them exactly what you would do with them. And I think this staff will do that.
Speaking of, you know, still recruiting and everything, it's to me as polarizing as ever. This kid out of Knoxville right now, Walter Nolan, was at the Knoxville Quarterback Club where Tim Banks was speaking this past week. And he just said, you know, you're a fool if you don't want to play for Rodney Garner. My thing is, how is he still doing Knoxville things but committed to Texas A&M? Why are kids at these quarterback club meetings where coaches, UT coaches are meeting?
Yeah, they honor a player or two of the week every week, and so he was honored as being the player of the week for his performance in the playoffs last week. I think Walter Nolan's recruitment is done, and that's not necessarily a popular opinion, even among some recruiting analysts that have said it's going to go all the way down to his signature, and I understand where they're coming from on that.
Yeah.
But since he committed to Texas A&M, I just don't hear any buzz that he's given anybody else the time of day. And if that's the case, I don't blame him. You know, that means a commitment. But he kind of fell in love with Texas A&M as the season went on. But when the season started, they weren't really in the conversation. It was Florida, Miami was in there, Georgia, and there were some other schools in his conversation. And then Tennessee was right there. But really, Texas A&M picked up steam. They made multiple visits there. His family made multiple visits there. And I think he's solid to A&M. Now, it's recruiting, so as we all know, anything can change in the last second. But, yeah, he was at the quarterback club yesterday. I think Tim Banks was speaking to the audience, but some of those messages may have had an audience of one. But from what I'm told, he was scrolling through his phone when Tim Banks was talking. So yeah. I don't know that that's you take any positive from that either. But I think that Walter Nolan deal is done, and he will be an Aggie, where Tennessee will probably only see him once in his college career, if that.
All right.
Brian, quickly on the way out, this Tennessee basketball team looks like a Ooh. Team that reminds me, of a 2019 Auburn team with the way its guards are kind of play and shoot the three, and a team that obviously beat Tennessee in a big stage in the SEC championship in the SEC tournament a couple of years ago. It also kind of reminds me of those old Bruce Pearl teams, right? You got these likable guards that are, you know, as a Kai Ziegler has got no offers from anybody and comes in as just hustling, and he's just fighting people with or without the basketball. This seems like a really likable group that had a really good win after a bad loss over the weekend.
I think they are better constructed than last year's team to make a run and to play some sustained high-level basketball throughout the year. My question is going to be what happens in games, in future games like Saturdays, where shots aren't falling early, where you're frustrated early. How are they going to be able to dig out of that? Because you know in college basketball, that's going to happen two or three times a year. It may happen on a random Wednesday night in Starkville. It may happen on a random Saturday afternoon. But what Rick Barnes has to do is come up with a solution for it. Because if your bad game happens in an SEC tournament semifinal when you're fighting for a top four seed, or on the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, as it did last year, when Tennessee was just non-competitive in their NCAA tournament game, what do you do when the shots aren't falling? What do you do when things aren't going your way? How Rick Barnes pushes that button is going to determine ultimately what the ceiling is for this team. Because I agree with you. 9 nights out of 10, they are going to be incredibly likable, incredibly fun to watch on the court. What do you do in that one? Because that one is going to determine how successful this season ultimately is.
Can you, real quick, on the way out, can you tell how special Kennedy Chandler is by the way the coaches treat him too? Ooh. Is it that noticeable?
A little bit there, but I mean, really, it's just watching him play.
Man,
he just has the it that not many guys at the college level have, and it's just special. And I encourage, you know, I said this when Tennessee had Grant and Admiral, and you had the opportunity to appreciate them for multiple years. Enjoy Kennedy Chandler. Don't worry about next year. Don't worry about anything else. Enjoy, appreciate what he's doing, because it'll be a lot of fun to watch. You don't have a lot of opportunities. You'll be talking about it for years to come.
No doubt about it. Brian Rice has been our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. You can find him on Twitter at Brian C. Rice, Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll have fun with Ramon. Ramon, be nice to the young kid.
What he said.
Even
what,
he knows.
What he said. Thank you, Brian. All right. So coming up, we get back into some of the Tennessee and Vanderbilt discussion.
Yeah.
And the line on this game, something interesting about the line on this game.
Stop.
As you start to scout the Commodores. Plus, we got Chris Williams, former Vanderbilt offensive lineman, coming up at 8:20. We will get into the matchup coming up next. It's J. Martin Ramone, powered by All Four Seasons of 104.5 The Zone.
Money.
J. Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors.
Hey.
Will Bowling, Ramon Foster with you. Big game music, courtesy of Jonathan Schaefer. UT Ticket Tuesday, congratulations to Floyd Gillihan of Lafayette. He is heading to see the Vols and Commodores this weekend. A game, Ramon Foster, where Tennessee is a 31.5-point favorite, which is 3 points more than they were favored against South Alabama. I can't believe this. Tennessee is a bigger favorite against Vandy than they were against the Jaguars of South Alabama playing with their backup quarterback. After a week, mind you, where Vanderbilt probably played their best game of the season on Saturday. Let's give credit where credit's due. But Vanderbilt loses 31-17 to Ole Miss. Mike Wright, 241 passing yards on 44 attempts. The offense rushes for 4.3 yards per carry and had their second 200-yard rushing performance against an SEC defense this season.
Mm-hmm.
and they're a 31.5-point underdog against Tennessee.
Man. Shout out to Mike Wright, by the way, too. His dad and I are in the same fraternity,
really?
Too.
Oh,
yeah, Mike Wright. Should have sent him to UT, but that's beside the fact. shout out to him, though. But, yeah, Will, they are – say that spread again.
31.5-point underdogs to Tennessee. Alabama was a 28.5-point underdog to Tennessee.
Is this because it's the last game of the season, senior day, and?
I think it's the way Tennessee looked against South Alabama. Honestly, you know this as well as I do, that Tennessee teams of the past get beat twice by Georgia.
Yeah.
They get beat twice by 4 or 5 week stretches where you're playing Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, and Ole Miss.
It's true.
This Tennessee team bounced back against the South Alabama defense. It's not that bad.
It wasn't that bad. Early in the season, when South Alabama was pumping, like, I was really like, oh, this might actually be a game. I didn't know what we were going to be.
Right.
As a team, as an offense, also as a defense.
And they didn't blow out Bowling Green, who at the time you thought was the worst team in power and in just all college football.
And that's what I was expecting. I was expecting Bowling Green 2.0, where they were running the crossing routes, confusing the defense, and we couldn't stop a nosebleed from ourselves, you know? And they boat raced South Alabama.
Isn't it incredible the amount of layers to that offense that Josh Heupel has continued to install as the season goes on?
And that's what you want, though, too. It's like, I'll give you the baseline. Cool, here it is. Roll the ball out. Y'all figure out how to hoop.
Sure.
Oh, now we're going to do drills.
Uh-huh.
Now we're going to work on our three-pointer.
Right.
Now we're going to run plays. Like, that's the system, and that's how you coach, honestly. That's how you keep kids engaged, too.
Yeah.
So, a little bit at a time, phrasing. But I'll be honest with you, and I think I might have said this last week, too. I didn't know this offense could work like this.
I didn't either.
And on the other side of it, I'm more surprised I didn't know this defense would respond the way that it did. Because that was the biggest question. If you go to the Kentucky game.
Yeah.
They stood tall. And yeah, I mean, the defense. Like 99 plays, Will?
Mm-hmm.
That's a spring game.
That's hard.
That's tough. Yeah. Especially for guys that got a defense. They got to hustle to the ball. They got to run to the ball. And, you know, they stood tall. It was, I don't know, I'm shocked still.
I am too. I had very little hope for this Tennessee team this year. Josh Heupel has a chance to lead all first-year Power 5 head coaches in wins as long as South Carolina loses to Clemson. I think as long as Brian Harsin loses to Alabama, which
both of those should.
So Josh Heupel, if all things go the way we think they're going to, will lead all Power 5 first-year head coaches and wins this year.
With the opportunity to have gotten. And I heard somebody, they made a good point about it too, about Heupel being Coach of the Year nationally. I think SEC potentially. But Coach of the Year nationally, SEC might be Kirby.
I think it's Kirby for both.
Yeah, it's Kirby. But you know, it's like, well, you got to judge Heupel on his decision not to bring in Hendon Hooker earlier, losing a Pitt. So he's got his blemishes, of course, but – I don't even know. Do we call it a turnaround?
Wait a minute. Losing the Pitt, they just won the Coastal.
I know.
I mean, that's a team that's going to be playing the ACC championship.
But you should have been up 21-0 on them in the first quarter.
Should have been.
Well, I understand that, but here's the thing. It was also they had 14 million penalties in that game.
Not a bad loss. That's true, too. But I think what they were going at is trying to find, comb through and find a reason not to pay him or not to give him a praise. And it was decision-making with the quarterback. But at the time, Joe Milton was freaking killing it, from my understanding, in practice.
And that's the thing. I understand that.
Yeah.
I look at it the other way with him, is that once he realized he needed to make a decision, he did.
That's true, too.
And that's the thing, is that when he had to make the decision, he made the decision instead of insisting it being Milton. Now, granted, Milton got injured.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
While he pipped.
But, you know what? It happens to everybody when you don't really know going into the season who your quarterback should be.
I'll say this, too, about Joe Milton. Stayed steady. The relationship him and Hendon Hooker have right now, and they spoke about it also, is cool. But watching him at the end of the South Alabama game and the Georgia game, he was more poised. His accuracy, I thought, was a little bit better. And he looked like somebody finally got to him. It's like, hey, you got a cannon. You don't need to shoot it every time. So he has some growth, I felt like.
Coming up next, we reset the headlines and look deeper into Tennessee and Vanderbilt. We'll get the Vanderbilt side of this matchup. Chris Williams, former Vandy tackle, former first-round draft pick of the NFL, coming up as well in about 30 minutes. Halfway through with the show, halftime. Get your stretch in. Marching band's going to play here for a couple minutes. When we come back, we'll get started for half number two. It's J. Martin Ramon, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. It's 104.5 The Zone.